Hi, and welcome to the Ready to Talk podcast. I am your host, The Thoughtful Beast. My cousin Flex is on today to talk about colonial mentality. If you don't know what that is and how it affects you, then this episode is for you. But seriously though, colonial mentality is important to know about whether your people were the colonized or the colonizers. I love this talk because it gives more context to how we continue to uphold white supremacy without even knowing about it. So let's go.
My name is Flex. I am Trixie's cousin. I'm here to talk about colonial mentality. I am an artist. I love food. I love my three cats. I love my partner. I'm queer as hell. My pronouns are whatever, just don't use them maliciously, and I will know if it is used maliciously. And I'm feeling okay. How are y'all doing?
Hopefully everyone's feeling fine. I'm feeling ready to do this. So thanks for joining me today. We've already been talking, in all honesty, because, you know, I don't care. We've been talking for a while already, talking about what we were going to talk about today. So let's start with this, Flex. Can you define colonial mentality for us?
All right, so if y'all do a quick Google search of colonial mentality, you got a really nice definition by Wikipedia, a very reputable source. But I think this definition suffices. A colonial mentality is the internalized attitude of ethnic or cultural inferiority felt by people as a result of colonization. So basically, feeling inferior to your colonizers or to the people who basically oppressed and exploited your peoples. And then when we bring in like the interesting like cross-cultural diaspora that like gets even more entangled, but we can talk about that later. I guess talking about the Philippines, since we're both
Filipino,
and then, you know, and I actually think talking about the Philippines in a sociological way is a great microcosm to talk about a lot of things, because we've been through so much as a nation. I mean, our namesake still honors, you know, King Philip, unfortunately. but prior to that, you know, the Philippines, I don't know. There were like many different nations and kind of nation states existing in the Philippines. But one thing that has always been true, even post-colonialism, is the Philippines was like a cultural harbor, like for trade. And so a lot of cultures went through the Philippines because of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because like, we're an island. Like, that's what happens, and we're
islands. Lots of them.
Yeah, we're islands. Correct. We're a bunch of islands, and like with islands 3,000. Comes lots of voyagers.
Yeah.
And I mean, I agree. I feel like the Philippines is like a great example of it. Like even now, but I am like thinking of like, to me comes like immigration. You know, like we were colonialized. We were Philippine. We became nationals of America, and we started immigrating and all that good stuff. And even though we're our own country now, like even as immigrants, like being an immigrant to a country, it's normal to have the colonial mentality, to have that, especially like, you know, and it makes sense with everything you hear, like, you know, with the whole like assimilation thing.
Yeah. Like the Thomasites. Right, you know, so just like, yeah, the many ways in which we were indoctrinated, and this is something again that exists in multiple nations that or peoples that were colonized, is indoctrination. Like if you can like hold captive the mind of the people, then you can really do a lot of things. Because you don't have to do a lot of work when they're doing the work of policing each other. And telling each other, you know, that the way to be is like your colonizer.
Yes. Yes.
It's incredibly violent, actually. It is incredibly violent. You know, it's like colonial mentality. Oh, it only happens in the brain, but it is incredibly violent. The effects that echoes from generation to generation, even across the diaspora, you know?
Which makes sense because colonialism is violent.
It's violent, you know?
You're going to other lands and like killing people and conquering them.
Yeah.
Because no one goes, oh, you want to be our leaders? Okay. Like, you know, and like throw their hands up and they're like, yeah. It's like, no, you have, like, conquering means that you are like, you are killing people. You are probably enslaving people.
There is no consent.
No, there is no consent. This is against their will. And it's so interesting that we say that now, because I don't think I had these feelings of, yeah, that's like, that is violent, like when I learned about history, like growing up.
No, that's honestly, the American education system is very dated and in a way is still indoctrinating people to believe that America is a great nation when it's like, it's so glossed over what the American people have done to Black people, to Native people, and to other countries, you know?
Yeah,
in world history, like learning about the Philippines, seeing like a page about, okay, and then the Philippines was conquered by Magellan, period, cool. And like, you really have to go out of your way to like really learn about your own history. And while I'm talking about that, I really want to bring up like colonial mentality, being like, earlier we were talking about how a complex that happens because of like the American mindset is blaming the individual and not the infrastructure. Is like blaming the sick person for being sick versus blaming our healthcare system for not making medicine or therapy or like making that accessible, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that applies to education. You know, like our history isn't made accessible to us.
No, it's not made accessible to us. And history is important because we need to understand how people created the systems we're in now and why they started, like the truth or why they started, you know, like the truth of like why Filipino nurses were so welcome into the US and how that started. And the truth about, you know, like how like they came over here, they were needed, but even though that they were needed and America kept being like, yeah, keep coming over, keep, you know, like we'll let you immigrate over here, even though they were doing that and they needed those Filipino nurses, they also were giving them like the worst jobs, you know. Mm-hmm. They weren't giving them a lot of money, they were paid less still, they had to do like, yeah, literally like the worst jobs, like all the harder jobs for less, and they don't talk about that, you know, because of that, you know. And then people kept coming because you know, America's still better. And, you know, like, it's not like that was necessarily untrue, like, but it's also just like, but what does better mean?
And is exactly. I mean, that's a great example of colonial mentality. Like, I've actually never heard any of my mom or my aunts complain about their job on like a level of like pay. Like, they've always been grateful. Specifically, you know, like our moms and aunties who are nurses, right? Mm-hmm. Who work in the medical industry. You never hear like this kind of like whatever inequities they pay or like they're dealing with. You hear like, oh, I am a nurse, you know, I am proud to be American. And it's just like, again, it's like, that's the colonial mentality. They equate this to being like, okay, I've made it.
Mm-hmm.
But along the process, I think what happens is that like, to what I think of is like, how many inequalities is my mom facing every day that she doesn't have the language to talk about, or that she doesn't feel like she has the right to stand up for herself for, you know?
Yeah. Or even, is it like worth it?
Exactly. Is it worth it? Like how much has my mom had to endure versus the average white woman nurse or white male nurse, you know? How much has she had to endure that she didn't have to? Or like, where could she actually be now? Because like, one thing that I know that my mom does talk about is like, she's really great at her job. And like, she gets like a lot of commendation from her coworkers because she gets, you know, the worst jobs done the like most efficiently and the most like skillfully and gracefully. But like, she's still struggling, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's weird. It's like, what would happen if we were able to, I don't know, like really confront colonial mentality in our families?
That's why it's hard to have these conversations, because, you know, like facing that, like it's really hard, and it's not a knock on their choices or the life that they have lived and the life that they gave us. But at the same time, it's just like, it's gonna feel hurtful to, you know, look at those things.
Yeah, it's hard. I was thinking about this actually earlier. I was like, you know, like the whole, I came here to give you a better life narrative. And it's like, the subconscious, the implications is that life in the Philippines isn't good. But then if you think about why life in the Philippines isn't good, it's because all of their resources are being taken from them. And one of those main resources being people, overseas workers, you know, and like, oh my God, Coca-Cola, actually. No, for real, during the 60s. So Palawan, okay. The history of Coca-Cola in the Philippines is busted. There's a video on YouTube you can find about Coca-Cola in the Philippines. It's like this 60s, like 30-minute long commercial about what Coca-Cola is doing in the Philippines. But they create jobs through agriculture, which a lot of Western agriculture is not done in a way sustainably. So a lot of Filipino land being used as for sugar canes, and then still kind of going off of the encomienda system, which if y'all don't know what that is, basically similar to like serfdom. That's basically what that is. And a lot of land, you know, is still owned by elites who have lineages tracing to Spanish and Chinese roots. But if you look up this Coca-Cola video, they're doing that. They're exploiting our land. And then they're using all the sand from Palawan to create the glass bottles. And, you know, and it's so messed up, because the way that they treat Coca-Cola, they're like, Coca-Cola, if you need energy, drink Coca-Cola. And then they have like a shot of like someone in an ICU, and they're treating Coca-Cola like it's medicine, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, this runs deep, this need to be American, especially. And I think it runs deep, but it's fresh. Like, this is the 60s.
Yeah.
This is the 60s, you know, where we're telling people that like, Coca-Cola is superior. Come work at Coca-Cola, work for our factories. And then even like our products, like part of Balikbayan boxes, you know, sending Balikbayan boxes to our Filipino family members, which, you know, is something that's actually really wholesome. Like the concept of Balikbayan, just like giving back to community, or it's direct translation, returning to your home, returning to like your bayan, your country.
Yeah.
Is like, a lot of people in the Philippines, they value products just for being American and not the actual quality. So like, there can be spam that's like made in the Philippines or anywhere else. But then if the spam is coming from America, it's like, that's the superior one. And it's like, I don't know. I do know.
No, it's interesting, yeah. You know, and it's like, you know, like, I guess something that would be like that here, it's like a status symbol, right? Like how Starbucks here is still a status symbol. Like mm-hmm. Apple is a status symbol. Mm-hmm. So back there, made in America, that's your status symbol. Because it's supposed to be the best. Which is super interesting because it's like, you know, there are reasons where it's just like, yeah, that makes sense because that still holds true in some ways. Like, you know, like America or Duterte, like, you know, where it's just like, and yeah. That's another example of like something being better, like America being better, but it's just like, how much better?
Well, yeah. And I think like the big thing that's missing is people are not seeing how Duterte as an entity, as a character, as a caricature would not exist if it weren't for America as a framework. Like,
ooh, that's good.
The way that police exist in the Philippines is like a direct echo of how police exist in America, you know? And it's like, again, this whole like America is the holy land, it's the better land. It's like, would America be better if we didn't have leaders that aspired towards, you know, like this caricature of American nationalism, like Marcos, who literally created like this culture of martial law for people to actually then leave, to want to leave. And then you go back to even Jose Rizal, right? I think Jose Rizal is misunderstood in many ways, you know, and celebrated in he should be celebrated in some ways, but he wanted to be recognized as a Spaniard. He was like, we are just as capable as you Spaniards. We need to be, you know, recognized as Spaniards. And it's like, what's wrong with all the different, and even the word Filipino, you know, like that's another big controversial thing is like, how do we further identify? And my direct short answer is like, dig a little deeper and see where you actually come from. So like, you know, for me, it's Ilocano and Kankanae, right? Benguet. So like that is a little deeper, a little more meaningful than just being like, you know, I'm Filipino because I'm not, you know, Bisayan. I'm not Aita. That's not my experience as a Filipino person.
That's so interesting that you bring that up just because like, right when you said that and you started saying it, I'm like, I wonder actually how many like Filipinos know that. Well, like not even just know, because I'm sure some people, you know, you ask people where your parents from and they know that, but like what that means. Because for us, we were lucky that we had Bibok.
Yeah.
You know, and so we know what Benguet means. We know what our heritage looks like. We know what our ceremonies look like. And then we know the differences from like our ceremonies for like Kalinga. Like we have those things, but that's not necessarily like the normal experience, I feel. And I began to realize, which makes going through college more interesting, because you know you'll have like the Filipino organizations and clubs, and then your introduction to your actual culture ends up being this plethora like of a bunch of Filipino cultures, and it's just like, but is that your culture? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not bad to be like, this is all the Philippines and that's part of my history. Like, that's great. Like, you know, and the fact that you can see all those things, that's beautiful. But like what you said just like made me realize that, oh, dude, there's probably a lot of Filipinos who just like, who don't know, you know, that like they might have even in college, like learned these different dances, but like, you know, the tinikling's not my dance. Like, that's not our dance,
yeah.
You know, but that's what a lot of people know as Filipino. So if you don't have if you weren't lucky enough, if you weren't like us and you were part of an organization that were just like, this is who you are, you know? And these are your stuff, then like, how are you supposed to know?
Yeah, I mean, like, even the language of being like lucky to know, which it's like, it should have been the standard, you know?
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to feel lucky to know who we are.
Yeah.
That shouldn't, you know, and like, that's something that I think about all the time is like, I shouldn't have to feel fortunate to like, to live in my own truth and honesty, you know, like that is something that I want for everyone. That should be a standard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess, right? Okay. I guess like, okay. The one big, you know, answer, like, how do you deal with colonial mentality? And it's decolonizing. Decolonizing. And like, but, and that's a big word that people don't, that people have been throwing around recently, and, you know, but decolonizing is a big process. It's not like, you know, I suddenly identify as like, oh shit, I'm Igorot. I'm suddenly decolonized. Because if we think about our family members, and it's like, who adamantly are very proud of their indigenous heritage, how much of them still need to do a level of decolonizing, you know, of seeing the Philippines, you know, not as a worse country than America, but a country that is hurt and that is processing. Because mm-hmm. That's the way the Philippines has been for a very long time, because our indoctrination from the Spaniards is earlier than slavery, earlier than a lot of, you know, colonized cultures. Yeah. And so there's a lot of like unraveling that still needs to happen.
Yeah. And it's so, and I feel like for me, what I feel like people, you know, because sometimes that's like, what do you mean decolonize? Like, I feel like a lot of people take certain words and they're very like, quote unquote, triggered by it because they see it as everything, right? They see everything that's like unlearning, like as like negative, as like, oh, you're saying everything is shit and you're saying like everything is bad. And it's just like, that's, you know, and that you're ungrateful. I feel like ungrateful is like a big word, like a big feeling that everyone has, like if you don't want to keep going with a status quo, whether that's like colonial mentality or not, or systemic racism, right? But it's just like, I can be grateful to be American. Like, I'm super grateful to be American because it's allotted me a lot of different things. That doesn't mean that I can't want to be like, you know, want to unlearn certain things or understand certain things about like the way I am or the preferences I have and how those preferences might be attributed to colonialism. Yeah. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, there's nothing wrong with like learning and then making a choice.
Yeah, it's like, it's the whole gratitude thing is like, even that, you know, like the you should be grateful to do that. It to me is like, it just tells me like what I want to say is that there is better. there is better, and like, I've learned to meet that kind of energy with like, and this is just because I've been like having conversations with family and friends and, you know, for a long time, where I've learned to just like meet that with like this kind of understanding. It's like almost like my anger has kind of evolved into honestly pity, because I just get sad because I just see people who are honestly willfully living a very small existence. Like, when you think limited, when you think that this is the best, and when you think, you know, questioning this framework is like hostile, like, oh my God, I have to wear a mask? Are you kidding? Or like, I have to recognize, you know, these Black people as my equal, what? Like, what's happening is that these folks are sticking to a really small worldview. And it at the end of the day, makes me sad, because you're limiting your quality of life because you're not allowing yourself to feel the full breadth of, like, humanity, of, like, seeing, you know, like, welcoming other people into your life and experiencing and dwelling in other cultures in a way that's, like, not exploitative or touristy or colonialisty, but just like, we're friends, and like, you're like, I guess like for me, I have like, I'm so glad, I'm so proud of my friends group because we all bring something different and like all my different friends groups. And it feels good to just talk about culture in a way that's outside of this Western concept of race, because you begin to realize all these commonalities and like beautiful things. And that's what I think of whenever I think of someone reacting in a way that's like, you should be grateful, is like, no, there's better. And I feel so sorry that you aren't opening yourself to that, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm glad for you because, you know, like hate is hard to have, you know, anger is hard to have in your life. I still get mad. I still get really mad. But you know, part of that is just like, cause I'm newer to this. And so like, I'm still learning how to process my emotions about it. And I do get sad too.
I think anger is really important too. I still think it's important. There are specific emotions that I feel like, and this is related to colonial mentality, because you know what colonial mentality is subconsciously protecting is it's protecting this idea of American idealism that is perfect and that's ideal, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are some emotions that I feel like we demonize, like anger or sadness, right?
Oh, or anger for sure.
And think about the way that we as a society not just demonize anger but criminalize it. We use anger, you know, to discredit passionate Black women who are intelligent, have every right to say what they're saying, and we call them angry Black women. We use anger to make people seem more animalistic so that it's easier for us to criminalize them.
Savages.
Right, savages, right. Exactly. Savages. So, but it's like anger, I think, the way that it exists as a form of communication and emotion is something that we need to learn to become fluent in, because it is it's a good emotion, you know, and especially when it's not coming from a place of malice, but mm-hmm. from a place of injustice and action. I think it's something that, you know, it's like a sword that needs to be sharpened. Or most recently, I was talking to my friend about like gun philosophy. you are safer around guns if you know how to use it, right? Like if you know proper gun discipline, you're safer. And like guns, unfortunately, are a reality of being American and this world. And so instead of ignoring it, being aware of what guns do, you feel more safe around them and you feel like you can deal with it easier when you know how to deal with it. Not to equate anger to guns. That's kind of a dangerous. That is a dangerous.
Don't equate that. It was a good example and I understood what you were talking about.
Yeah.
The more you know about it. Like I love emotions. I feel like, you know, emotions aren't good or bad. Like it just depends. Like mm-hmm. there are no good and bad emotions. Like emotions are emotions and, you know, they exist for a reason. They totally exist for a reason. They exist for me, because my learning from emotions very much comes from like my own experience with therapy and my own education is just like, you know, like emotions are a tool, right? They're helping us communicate to each other,
mm-hmm.
right? To ourselves, right? I'm crying. Why am I crying? It's like, well, I'm sad, you know, like something's trying to communicate inside of you that something's wrong.
Yeah.
You know? And they're supposed to like validate your responses to like things that happen to you. You know, like they're validating, like injustice happens to you. Of course you're going to be mad. Like that's a normal reaction and you should be mad.
Yeah.
Like it does exist for a reason. And like what you said, like, you know, like they are things that can be used and definitely need to be understood. So people don't equate just anger with bad, mm-hmm. you know, like even like the word protest has such an angry connotation, right? That you always have to put peaceful in front of it for people to, like, you know, it's like, oh, it's not a peaceful protest unless someone says it's peaceful. Like, it's like, we're just like, okay, that's a whole thing. Like, and it's really unfortunate because again, people deserve to be angry. Like, people deserve to be angry, and we all need to understand. So we, like you said with guns, like, so we better understand how to deal with it. You know what I mean? Like, we need to understand what this anger is, so we can be like, well, why are they angry? Like, people aren't looking past, like, they just see anger. Like, they're just like, oh, they're angry. And this is like a hard stop. And unfortunately, even with that, like, this kept coming up in my head because I was talking about anger with someone else a couple weeks ago. Like, you know, like when Kavanaugh, when his whole trial, he was angry. He was so angry. But how was he labeled? He was labeled as passionate, right? When it's a white man and it's going for the status quo, it's going to be seen as passion, you know? And, but for everyone else, like, you're just seen as angry. You're angry. You are unprofessional.
Unprofessional, right.
That's such a big one, though.
Yeah, like, and going back to colonial mentality, like, we're protecting this idea of America that's not ugly. Like, oh, that's an ugly emotion. Don't talk like that. Or, oh, that's shameful. Don't talk like that. Oh, why are you acting like that? You know, and it's like all these ways that we suppress these emotions with colonial mentality, and the toxic ways that they manifest because of colonial mentality. You know, and earlier we were talking about shame. I think about like chismis. I think about the different, like the very different specific ways Filipino people can be abusive to their children, like almost gaslighty, you know, and those are some of the most painful conversations that I'm still having, you know, with family. Is like, I want to, and it more for them than me, because, you know, I have done a lot of work to find some sense of emotional security. But it's like, for them, it's like, I wish for us to be able to have meaningful, vulnerable conversations about your pains and your struggles, you know, without you having to laugh about it. Or something that, you know, my parents like to do is act as if I'm not talking. And I'm just like, that's really disrespectful. I'm talking to you.
You know, really disrespectful.
All of a sudden, they're going to hang up the phone. And I'm like, but you, what? All of a sudden you're going to hang up the phone because I'm bringing something up that's like really difficult to talk about. And it's like, I want to talk about this because it's going to be good for you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really sad because that's really true. Like, honestly, like me and my immediate family, like we don't really, talking's not our thing. It's super not our thing. Emotions have never been a positive thing, topic of conversation. And it is sad, you know, it's so sad. And I do think about it a lot just because like mental health is so important to me. And when I look at the possibility for mental health, like for good mental health for my family, you know, and like other immigrants too, and other minorities, just like, it sucks so much when, you know, like one, like mental health isn't a thing because when, for many reasons, but like one big one that always sticks in my head is like, you know, you're an immigrant, you're trying to survive. Mm-hmm. Or you come from a country where really like, yeah, you're literally farming, you know, like you're literally trying to you're trying to get food for the week, you know, like you're coming from places where like survival is like, that's what you're thinking about. You're thinking about survival, right? So you can never think about thriving. And then to come to another country where like you are doing better, but you're still stuck in survival. And now there's that added, you have to like survive now here. Things are more expensive. Like, yeah, you might have more opportunities, but also it's like, you need to fit in. Like you need to fit in. And like that causes like erasure of who we are. Like, and you know, like obviously our parents did pretty well because like they had Bebop, and so like we know about our own culture. But like it sucks, and mental health like goes away even more because now it's like this added survival zone. And also mental health here, even though America is like a first world country, mental health is still super stigmatized here.
Yeah.
So, and it's like that American dream that you said, right? You have to be perfect.
Yeah.
You came here to be perfect, not to be unhappy and have mental health issues. Like,
right.
That's not why you came
here. Even though the process of coming here and the process of surviving here is very traumatic.
is.
Even like, though it is like, this is like, it is traumatic to be displaced.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think one, like, if you've ever moved, that's like a really small example of what it's like. But if you've ever had to move in your life, you know, like moving, the process of moving your home, your security, it is stressful. And so like the whole, not just moving like between like 10 miles away, but moving to an entirely new country with like an entirely new social paradigm, you know, like that is stressful. And yeah, and I don't know, one thing I think about is, have you ever looked into Filipino psychology?
No.
So psychologiya ng Pilipino, or Filipino psychology, is, I need to, cannot remember who originated it, but it came out of a recognition that Western psychology was not enough to talk about Filipino mental health. And I think like this applies to not just Filipino people, but like, you know, I think we need to think about mental health in many more contexts than the Western one, because even in America, mental health, like, yeah, like, even in America, mental, like the way that Western medicine has been kind of structured, it's still to the advantage of white people. If you think about who is able to have access to it, who, who's able to simply have access to it, you know? And then the combination of colonial mentality of like, oh, you're fine, you're not depressed, you're just sad, right? That's another level on top of like feeling like it's inaccessible to you, feeling like it's something you don't need, you know? And yeah. So I don't know, when I looked into Filipino psychology, it became kind of enlightening because it took a lot of core values that are very Filipino and transformed them. And it kind of like, it's made speaking to my family feel easier because you can kind of relate it to them. And I feel like this is something that's important, is like while mental health is like really important, we need to think about the ways that it, you know, has been made inaccessible to people. And how can we make that accessible, and not just through, you know, a distillation or like simplification of like the Western medicine portion of it, but like looking at different cultures and the way that they deal with mental health, because that exists, you know. So many different cultures have, a lot of cultures actually recognize mental health and sicknesses, and actually a lot of Western medicine, you know, appropriates that, but it isn't deemed valid because it's not Western medicine, you know. It's just new agey. It's just, you know, it because it doesn't have like a stamp of like PhD, you know, it's invalidated. When for like literal millennia, these practices have sustained multiple cultures. But Filipino psychology is fairly new. And like it talks about hiya or shame in, I think, a way that is very special, because one thing that I learned like studying it during, like as I was going to CCSF, shout out to my mentors, love you. But one thing I was learning is that the way that trauma exists in a lot, at least a lot of like Western health processes, is like this kind of severing of trauma, right? It's something that you can sever, or something that you can get a prescription for, and not something you immediately confront. And one thing that I was learning studying Filipino psychology was taking trauma and transmuting it versus, you know, like, I'm just gonna sweep it under the rug and not address it, but truly sit with your own trauma in a way that is like kind of like humanizing it and understanding of it, and transforming that trauma into something that can be used meaningfully for yourself. And I don't know, I just think about like, you know, also how white people weaponize mental health. against other people. I mean, you see how white people have, they like, again, that's another example of white privilege, is how they weaponize our very own institutions against our very own institutions. Like, for example, you know, like, I can't wear a mask because I'm sick. I'm because like I have an illness. I can't breathe. And it's just like, it's like they feel entitled to thinking that way, you know, and to weaponize it like that. Or like a lot of white people, you know, using white tears to kind of deflect from ever being accountable, or moments where white people are trying, like, we're trying to hold white people and some non-Black people also accountable, or trying to have conversations. One like very learned behavior by like white women is to like cry and be like, oh my God, I'm a victim, I have depression. And you know, it's like, I don't want to discredit your mental health, you know, but the way that it's weaponized in itself is just like you have that paradigm existing. Well, not paradigm, but that complex on top of brown people who need mental health, who have, you know, their scientific proof of generational trauma being passed down, yes, right? And they don't feel like they have access to it.
Because they don't.
They don't. They
straight up don't.
Yeah, so, and it's like, so decolonizing mental health, you know? Just like,
that is such a big thing. Like, I am glad you bring that up. Like, I feel like trauma, like, is this thing that is so not understood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for anyone, and like your whole like thing with like, you know, like, that is how people act. Like, let's just pretend this trauma didn't happen.
Exactly.
And, like, it away. And I feel cool. This is like a very American example, but I just think it's very straightforward. Also, I started watching Army Wives as a means to be like, this is something I really don't understand in my free time, because I've been binging through all these shows because it's quarantine. I'm going to watch something that I would never watch. But like, you know, like, it's like, what? But they brought up PTSD, right? With trauma. And it's just like the expectation for someone to go through something and literally just like, you're home, so it's gone.
It's gone.
Right?
It's gone.
The soldier's home, so it's fine.
It's gone.
Fine. Like, and it's like, no, that's not real. But it's true. Like, that's what America likes to do with trauma. Like sweep it under the rug, right? If you were traumatized as a kid, that was way in the past. Get over it.
Right.
Or you're not
older now.
Yeah, you're older now. Like, you, I don't know. Yeah, oh, you're fine. And it's just like, oh my God. You know.
Oh,
and
thank you. Is that easy? Oh my God.
It's over. You came to a new country, so everything you felt before is all erased.
Gone.
Whatever trauma, however hard it was for even you to get here, it does not matter anymore.
It's gone. Oh my God, thank you.
That's an American dream, and it's so pretty. It's so pretty, and it's going to be super hard for you to get it all, and you're gonna go to like think that you have it. It's fine, because it's fine. Like, it's so like, trauma is such a big thing. Like, it's such a big thing. Intergenerational trauma is such a big thing. Like even just for like Americans, like even just like for white people, right? Like, thinking about the Vietnam War, right, and how the Vietnam War messed everybody up. Those people came home, those veterans were treated like crap, and they had families. And guess how their families were treated, or like had to deal with their mental illness?
Mm-hmm.
And that was silenced, because, you know, that didn't exist. PTSD, what is that, right? Trauma, what is that? And it just goes down. Like, it's really interesting to think. I've been thinking about that a lot, like, you know, like being a millennial, and be like, people being like, well, why are millennials so like, so anxious, so depressed? And it's like, well, you know, the Vietnam War happened, and then that, like, people came home, and then, you know, they had their children, and then their children were really messed up from that.
Also 9/11.
Oh, and then 9/11. Like,
you know.
Yeah, it's like, it's an ongoing thing. Like, there's going to be different steps in it. Like, that trauma does not just stop with the person who was in that trauma, or, like, even, you know, in that space, right? Like, like, again, Vietnam, like their children suffered through it, and then their consequences come like from that, like behavioral and even like biology, right? Epigenetics.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. Like, you cannot escape the trauma. It will like embed itself in your biology. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Don't even know that. You know what I mean? Like, how many people do you know what epigenetics is? You know what I mean? Like, and that's a problem.
I mean, just even thinking about like one thing that was really easy for me to start talking about, like a very a very visible physical like manifestation of trauma are people's postures, the way they carry themselves. And this is something that I learned through being, you know, the love of my life, being like loving kinesthetics and just like loving movement and, you know, and Ritzy, you know, kinesiology, just like all these folks in my life who've like shown me, and I'm like learning, like entering yoga, just like all these mentors in my life teaching me about how we carry trauma in our bodies. And like, you know, like one example that I think everyone, especially us on a digital age, is like the forward posture and the closed shoulders because of being on computers or being on our phones, right? And then how that affects like all these different systems that happen inside here, our breathing systems, and how that like reflects, you know, how closed off we become. Like, that's like a physical like indicator of like some sort of like trauma that may have like happened over time or something. Or, you know, it's just like, I don't know. I just think about like all these ways that trauma like has literal like effects that aren't just like, oh my God, I just thought of something and it was just so traumatizing. I need to go and cry. Like, it's, it follows you.
It does. It follows you. And with no understanding of it, like, it's awful. Like, I have PTSD. So it's just like, I feel like trauma is such a big thing and people don't understand, like, it does follow you, like, for your life and, like, for the rest of your life. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing because it's part of your history. So, of course, yeah, it's going to be part of your life. But if you don't deal with it, like, there are a lot of, like, negative repercussions. And a lot of it, like, for complex PTSD, right? Like, if you're in a prolonged situation of hopelessness and helplessness and trauma, that stuff really, like, that as well as normal PTSD, like, affects the way that you talk to people.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just, this is a very, like, shallow way, but, like, you know, if you're always afraid of people and you have to talk to people to survive, just, like, think about, like, living like that, right? Like, say you were so traumatized because it was a really random, this is all I can think of right now. You know, like, say, like, you went to order coffee and this barista just, like, chewed you out. Like, ridiculously just chewed you out for no reason, right? Like, and, like, say, like, you were just, like, really young and impressionable. Like, you, like, it sounds like a joke that you might be scared of baristas for the rest of your life, but, like, that might happen.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, that, because that can, that's scary when something scares you like that. Like,
yeah.
You know, your body remembers that because it's trying to protect you.
And then, yeah, I would add also, what is that barista going through? And that's one thing, is we don't understand how, if we don't, you know, keep our traumas, like, if we aren't able to understand them or process them, they can manifest in really maladaptive ways that are hurtful for other people. And that's how you get, like, you know, people with mental health issues who are abusive in many ways. And I, you know, I think about, like, the generation, the boomer generation, or like the people who had to deal with like a ton of stuff in their own way, but don't have processing tools. And so the way that they manifest are really toxic, you know? Oh, who's here?
Ritzy's here.
Hi,
did you invite Ritzy?
I did. I said hi.
Hi, Ritzy. I'm going to bring you on. Hi.
What's up, baby?
Hi, I just finished 2 back-to-back interviews.
Hey, nice.
For the last 10 minutes, but I love it.
What did you say?
You're joining us for the last 10 minutes, but I love it. This is my other cousin.
Who are we talking to?
We're on my live show, so hello.
And hi, hello. Everyone.
So, sorry, I totally interrupted you, Flex, but I just really started laughing, and I was like, I see her!
It's good! This is the great, it's good to have Ritzy here, because you're coming in, and we're talking about trauma, and how when you don't develop a relationship with your trauma that's healthy, it manifests in unhealthy and toxic ways. Do you have crumbs of knowledge to offer?
It's not going to take 10 minutes to, to unpack something like that.
Well, cannot, but go ahead and start. It will be great.
We can start this. So, trauma. That's such a broad term. I don't know. I think one of the most prevalent things that I have started to realize is not being able to ever have financial stability. So money trauma, coming from a family of immigrants, people that came over from the Philippines for a better life. We know the story, a better life, better chance at X, Y, Z. It is exhausting to learn how to have a relationship with money, how to always hear that phrase, oh, but that's cheaper, or, oh, turn down the electricity, we don't want to pay too much, when in reality, we were actually financially stable. It was that mindset of never being able to have enough. I think Flex and I actually talked about this many moons ago with scarcity. What was that? It was something scarcity.
Scarcity mindset.
There we go. The scarcity, thank you. It's the scarcity mindset of never being able to have enough. So always preparing no matter what, just in case. That's
my.
Go ahead.
No, I, oh my God, is that a normal thing?
It's a thing.
I tell my boyfriend, like the financial, like, okay, the financial trauma, that's a thing where, like, I tell my boyfriend, like, I have a horrible relationship with money because I always thought, I mean, I know at some point we were having a really tough financial time. Like, I know that was true, like, especially 2008. Like, that was a really awful time. Like, I know that's true. But I, when I was younger, like, I couldn't tell if we were poor or not. And, you know, like, you know, your parents would tell you, like, oh, no, like, we can't afford that. We can't afford this. But then, like, finding out later that, like, a lot of the time we were fine. And then, like, how that, like, dude, that fucked me up.
we can swear. I didn't know that.
Oh, we can swear. I swear all the time. It's
but,
my
yeah, scarcity.
Oh, my God. Wait, did that happen to you, though? Did that happen to you, too, Flex? Were your parents like that? Is this a normal Filipino
this,
thing?
This is a normal now? Thing. Like, the scarcity mindset is a very normal thing. And it's, like, I think it relates to colonial mentality. And I wanted to talk about, you know, our ability to be open and to receive and give, right? And I feel like part of our scarcity mindset is this fear of, like, protecting what's ours. And then that can relate to the crabs in a bucket mentality where, you know, you're pushing other people down to get up. And I feel like that's something that is internalized in Filipino in communities and families, which is weird because, you know, one thing that I hold on to, one positive thing since we have little time, one positive thing that I want to, you know, hold on to that keeps me really, you know, in my community in a really wholesome and fruitful and sturdy way is like, after everything is said and done, I know that I have a, like, family with, you know, my Filipino family. I know that whatever happens, I'm going to have a plate of food when I go to our potluck. I know I'm going to be greeted and said hello to in a very meaningful way. And I hold on to that because at the end of the day, Filipino people, like, still have that spirit of community. And, like, that is, like, the hope that I have is, like, no matter what the situation is, like, I know there's love. And I want to acknowledge that love in a way that isn't, you know, dismissive of our pain, because oftentimes this whole, like, I love you, I do this for you, is used in a way to dismiss any
weaponized problem.
Yeah. But I want to use it more as like a recognition of like the soul that's still there that like we need to fight for.
Yeah. And I mean, that's beautiful that you say that and like holding on to that, you know, community aspect that Filipinos have. And that's always like, that's something that for me personally, like when BLM happened, I was just like, whoa, why is there so much pushback and resistance from like Filipinos and other Asians, where like, well, especially Filipinos though, because it's like, it is that community thing. It's just like, why, you know, like if this stranger like came to our house, you'd be like, how come we're not feeding them? How come, like, how come they're not eating? Like, exactly. You know, you had that whole confrontation, but then they look at the protests and stuff. And then some people are just like, oh, what is this Black Lives Matter thing? Like all lives matter. It's just like, wait, like what happened to that community? Like what happened to the hospitality and like the love? Like, because it's just like, it's so confusing and it's so strange because like that is in there. And I could like imagine like, you know, bringing home strangers and then your mom's going to hug everybody. But when it's thought of, I don't know, when it's becoming more abstract, when like literally like for some reason, like Black individuals are different than Black people in general. Like it's super weird, right? Like
it's so weird.
Yeah. Because I feel that a lot of Filipinos do this because I was in a workshop actually, shout out to Little Manila Stockton. Attended a workshop of theirs discussing and addressing anti-Blackness in Southeast Asian communities. This was, I think, last week. And we talked about how a lot of what individuals do, not, of course, inclusive of Filipinos, but also inclusive in the Southeast Asian community, they take a step back and say, oh, this is not our fight. Let them figure it out. Yes, it is our fight it is our fight because why shouldn't it be? When it comes to what Trixie said, being able to have that warming, welcome, instant mentality of welcoming strangers and feeding them and sometimes gifting them truly the clothes off our back for no apparent reason at all, feeding strangers on the street. Where does it go? It goes somewhere else where it is not deserving. We uncomfortable. Where they are not deserving, where these individuals that are fighting are not deserving of our attention, they're not deserving of our love, and because they say so, because I choose to be that way. I am receiving my love because of what I believe in.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue the love is kind of misappropriated to the wrong kind of people, you know, like white people, I don't know, but that's another conversation. But I think about like, I think this is the danger of not knowing your own history, because if you know Filipino history, you know how much solidarity we've had with not just Black people, but Mexican people and like Guamanian people, all these people like across the globe that we have all like fought with in solidarity against oppressive regimes and systems and have fought for us, you know, like. Again, David Fagan, is it David or Daniel? I don't know, but he, you know, the Buffalo Soldier that switched sides during the Filipino-American War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like, it's there, that community's there. We have to remember how to access it in a way that's like, yeah, for the community.
For the good of humanity! It's Attack on Titan. That's what I'm thinking of, literally. Attack on Titan.
Anime.
Yeah. Ritzy. Okay, well, Ritzy, you're going to just have to come back for your own talk because we've reached our time. But thank you so much, you two, for being here. And I'm glad we got to talk. I feel like this talk could go on a million times longer because, like, it's like, yeah, we're getting down to good stuff. Not that it wasn't good before, but it's been great. And I will ask you both an ending question, which is, I'll ask you this. And this could be something that you already said, so you could repeat, or it could be something new. What do you hope for your Filipino families in terms of colonial mentality? What do you hope for? Flex, you go first, because this was your topic.
A minute to think. I hope for my Filipino families and your Filipino families and every Filipino family and any family applicable that we're able to come to a sense of honesty, albeit painful and visceral, that will allow us to finally make us feel whole and to actually like come home with ourselves. Because that's honestly like the end of like the end goal of dealing with colonial mentality and decolonizing and indigenizing, I think is just like to eventually return to a state of being that is free and prioritizes living as much as it does surviving. And loving, live, laugh, love, live,
love. Okay, Rissy.
I just want them to listen. To listen and to understand. You don't have to say anything. You can form your opinions, but we need to step back when it's not our turn to talk, when it's not our experiences that are being displayed. We need to listen to stories and listen to the voices that are being uplifted, because it's most of the time the voices aren't being heard and we're trying to talk over them. Because if we're trying to listen to argue, we're not trying to listen to understand. That is an easy thing. That is so hard to do with many individuals across all communities, is to listen to understand. Just shut up. Just use your two ears. It's really hard to do sometimes, but I believe that that is something that we can, I believe that is something that we can start with, is just to listen. First,
supposed
to shut up, yeah, but to also listen, truly.
Oh, that was beautiful. You guys, I remember when these two were like little babies.
Oh my God.
Thanks for being with us today, Flex and Ritzy. Ritzy doesn't want to be found, she expressed that. But you can find Flex at videogamer.com, VideoGamer.com, or on Instagram as videogamer, spelled the same way as the website. I hope you guys learned a lot today from Flex. I did. It's 2021, everyone, so let's get this colonial mentality out of our heads so we can love each other better, love ourselves better. Oh, both of those things are so important. So until next time, make sure you are taking care of yourself so you're ready when it's your turn to talk.